1, 2, 3, 4.
Bringing you the real insights from science tech startups. Learn from experienced founders and experts how to build a successful startup. You are listening to the Working with Startups from Science podcast with your host, Bartosz Kaidas.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of Working with Startups from Science. In this episode, we dive deep into medicine, communication, and sciencepreneurship. My interview guest is the amazing Dr. Laura Sorace. First of all, Laura is a brilliant scientist and group leader at the University of Bonn in the Department of Clinical Chemistry and Clinical Pharmacology. At the moment, she and her lab are trying to understand how immune cells are working in tumor development. Before her work in Bonn, she worked as an awarded Marie Curie postdoc fellow at the Institut Pasteur in Paris. You think that's cool? Now be ready for the next part. In addition to her scientific career, Laura founded her own company called Nowz Communication, a science communication agency that helps scientists all over the world to communicate their research results. Like Laura says, we bring science to people's home. Today, we are talking about her work, her career, and why she founded an own company. Now, fasten your seatbelts and let's dive into our interview. Hey, Laura, welcome on stage.
Hi, thank you very much for the kind introduction and for having me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure and honor to having you here. So you have such an amazing career, and I thought you need to talk about that in my podcast here, Working with Startups from Science, because you are the perfect role model for sciencepreneurship, right?
Thanks. Super nice of you. But I guess I fit the profile.
Very good. So just give the audience some insights about you. How do you come to this scientific career path, and why did you become a scientist? What was your motivation behind that?
Yeah, actually, I mean, it was quite of a confused choice that I made when I was in high school, because, as everybody struggles to understand what to do next, right? So whether to go at university, where, and to do what, and for what in the end, so which job should you do in your life? I was heavily confused, of course, but I just knew that I loved science in general, from mathematics to biology or physics, and then I kind of try to get more information about this, and it was one of my professors at the high school that started to talk about how genetic engineering was changing the face of treatments. And at that time, I mean, of course, genetic engineer for me was like, okay, what is he talking about? And then actually, because I didn't understand it, I said, okay, maybe I should learn more about that. And so I moved to find a university that were focused on this genetics and molecular biology. And so let's say that I made several people in my environment unhappy with this choice, because everybody was looking forward to have me as a medical doctor or engineer or whatever. But somehow my gut feeling told me, no, go to do biology, because it's definitely something that maybe will spark your interest. Mm-hmm. So I left the south of Italy and moved to Milan, where I basically started my studies thanks to the, let's say, a scholarship, because unfortunately my family at that time couldn't support me. Mm-hmm. So then but I was really motivated to move and to do this. And so I applied for scholarships, and luckily I got it. And so I could study in the north of Italy for my bachelor studies and master's. And so there I would say that I understood I made the good choice. So okay. Choosing biology. Exactly,
biology. Yeah. So and how was your motivation or your interest? Mind you're working with like medicine connected topics, immune cell therapies and stuff like that. So how do you went to that kind of direction?
Yeah, this was exactly in Pavia. That was actually the name of the university in the north of Italy. That is not really Milan, it's just close by. But I always say Milan because people are a little bit Pavia. So, but it's actually a very old university that was founded. It's one of across the first university that was founded in Italy. And so my first laboratory experience was in a lab that was doing virology. Now, they were more looking at the molecular aspect of virology. But I was reading more and more in this topic as a master's student there. And I was finding that virology was somehow tightly connected to the immune system because I mean, of course, at that time I was still studying, but I could see from my courses and the lab that as there are viruses, there are systems to avoid to get sick by a viral infection, right? And so I said, okay, I mean, that's cool to know the virus side, but I also would like to know how we grew, like, you know, developed into organisms that can actually protect from these attacks. And so I decided to do a PhD in something different that was more, let's say, as you were saying, medically, like closer than pure virology or molecular biology. And this was more like immunology. And I was lucky enough to get accepted in this cancer biology program school in Zurich University. And there I moved there for my PhD. And there I started working in the laboratory of Professor Marie Spandenburg. And she has this laboratory of tumor immunology. So I had to face two new topics. One that was immunology and the other one that was tumor. And so I still remember the interview with her because I told her during my interview, so I passed with a high score. So then she welcomed me saying, that's great that we have this chance and let's discuss. And then I was like, okay, if you want to, risk to have me in your lab because I'm not an expert in immunology and I'm not an expert in tumor, but I'm super willing to learn. I'm really eager to learn both of them. Then that's great. And then I mentioned that another thing is that I play football and I would love to continue play football also during my PhD. Cool. Can I do both? And she told me, yeah, as long as you manage to do everything, then you can start here. And so this is how I approached immunology and tumor immunology.
Okay. Yeah, that's a super cool story, right? Very nice. So you did your PhD then in Zurich, in Switzerland. Yeah. So you went a little bit more into the north direction, right? Yeah. From south to north. And then you did your PhD and then you got the chance with the fellowship program from Marie Curie to get as a postdoc to Paris. So what was there your main challenge?
Yeah, there I actually when I finished the PhD, I felt like I've learned a lot on the field of adaptive immunity and in general like how immune responses kind of react in the presence of an insult like a tumor. And and then during the last year while I was doing my PhD, I kind of realized there was another aspect of the tumor microenvironment that I didn't yet have the chance to explore. And this was mostly on how the tumor would survive in terms of what the tumor eat or how is the tumor metabolically active. Because as every cell, Also, the tumor cells has its own needs and has to be supported towards growth. And so, this question started to come and go in my head. And then, at the same time, I was starting to read more and more publication with coming up in this in this field. And so, I was like, okay, why not studying what actually cells need to eat to actually support themselves in their function? And this is true for any cells you can think, including the immune system. And so the Marie Curie project was based on this new immune cell subset. It was actually discovered only 15 years ago, of innate lymphoid cells, they are called. And their role is that they actually are residing in our barrier tissue. So these are tissues that are actually exposed to the external part of the world. So let's say just a quick example for those that are not in the field is like, for example, our lung or our skin. When you breathe air that is coming from outside, right? The same is your skin enters in contact with everything. And the same goes for the gut, right? Because we eat and then we process food that is coming from outside. And then there are some cells that are in these organs, and they are quickly equipped to respond to anything, any type of insult that comes into our body. And so I got interested on how quick these cells are and how specialized they are. And so I decided to understand how do they manage, you know, maybe they have a specific diet or maybe they rely on specific resources that make them super active, super powerful. And so I wrote this project together with Professor Di Santo at Institut Pasteur, and he's an expert in these cells, these innate lymphoid cells, and not only. And so I decided to join his lab, and again, I started the new because, I mean, this was again a new topic. And so, of course, the first years of setup and learning and challenges came right away, but you know, in a city as beautiful as Paris, so I cried with one eye, as we say in Italy.
All right, so maybe you could just like pick us up. I mean, what you've learned in biology is like, you know, how the cells are working and stuff like that. And maybe there are some people or listeners who maybe thought like, oh, why they don't know what cells are eating. So maybe can you briefly describe what's the challenge? Why we don't know that?
Yeah, sure. I would say that, I mean, the concept that every cell needs fuel, you know, like a kind of exactly food for cell. Yeah. This was it's a very old concept. Yeah. So it's not something that we started wondering only now, of course. Yeah. But there were not really the technology to ask this specific question for every cell type in our body. And now that, let's say, science technological advancement actually kicked in this, specifically in this field, many new ways and technologies to actually address this question have become available, especially in the last, I would say, 10 years. And then now we can really go cell by cell, and by studying their metabolites, that are these teeny tiny molecules that are hanging in inside the cell, we can actually try to guess and to understand a little bit more what originally the cell was feeding on. Yeah, because in our diet, we have a very complex set of nutrients, and not only, because we ingest many different things that are not only nutrients, because food are a complex, unique combination of different resources. And so how do cells react to that? It's a very, you know, enormous field of research, because, of course, we can guess how they react to, let's say, specific standard already known components like carbohydrates, lipids, amino acids. I mean, how many diets do you know that are based on reshuffling these nutrients? But more and more we are understanding that there is another layer besides these very important metabolites that we are trying to understand a little bit more, that are all the metabolites and all the small molecules that come from plant, from, for example, the bacteria we have in our gut or other external resources, like sources, like, for example, some food that are maybe processed and then they retain some molecules. And so all of this, all what we ingest, of course, has an impact on our body. I mean, there was a philosopher of a long time ago that was saying, you are what you eat. And that's actually true.
Okay.
You know, that we really are what we eat. So be careful on what you eat.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can hear that. You have your Italian background. So
it's exactly.
quite a good cuisine, right?
Yes,
and France. Exactly. So maybe you're choosing the countries by food, right?
Yeah.
Italian,
I mean,
France.
If you want to say that.
And now Germany.
No, I have to say that of course, like, eating is one of your most frequent activity of the day, right?
Right.
As drinking and as breathing and sleeping. So of course it must have a big impact on your health, you know? So I guess that's a generally important question, and there are many different laboratories across the world that are asking the same things. And now in the lab here in Bonn, I'm actually expanding in this field my research question, that now, besides trying to understand basic a basic knowledge about what immune cells need to support themselves and their activities, I'm also trying to understand what happens when there is a tumor. And so that would be the game changer, because as I said before, of course, the tumor also needs to support itself. And so how is this, combination of coexistence between different cells? So like a cell that have different needs, different speed, different function.
All right. So maybe you can take us literally in your lab. So for people who can't imagine what you're doing, so what are now your biggest questions, and what is your aim, like writing a Nobel Prize, or what is your work?
No,
what you actually do?
Yeah, I actually do science because I love it. You know, it's just something that I think every science should be kind of super happy to have this opportunity to ask different questions and also have the means to try to find an answer and learn always something new. I think it's a privilege to be a scientist. So whatever I'm going to accomplish in terms of steps or stuff, it's not important. What I wanted to really accomplish is to have the opportunity to bring forward my ideas and my science. And so this new position here will allow me to do that, because of course I'm supported by this Max Seder grant. And so I can open the lab and I can start investigating on the questions that are really kind of burning for me. Yeah?
So just maybe explain a little bit. You received a grant from Max Seder.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. Yeah. I should maybe explain. So there are different funding agencies that are actually at the European level or at the state level. In Germany, the Krebshilfe, which is the Cancer Aid Association, so that every country mostly has, provides support to research. And so to access the support, then what scientists can do is to write their project and their scientific questions and explain how they're going to basically practically do them, or like trying to answer them in the lab. And then a commission of experts analyzes the proposal and the projects that are explained, if they are explained in enough details, if the questions are relevant to the field and what we're going to actually achieve for the patients. Because this is at the end the most important outcome. How can we help people that are suffering from diseases. And so after they assess these three main bullet points, then actually, if the grant is successful, then you are awarded a certain amount of money to perform the research in a certain time. In this case, it would be 4 to 5 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, so in basic words, if you know what the cell fuel is, you can like cut the fuel for the tumor cells. And then
yeah, exactly. I would say, like, we can imagine it as, I like to say, food as a medicine, yeah? So this is what is the concept or what fascinates me the most. Can we actually adjust what we eat and then have an impact on how we deal with diseases, yeah, and how we boost our immune system? So can we provide certain nutrients to support better our immune cells instead of cancer, or, and of course also deplete some nutrients from our diet and then kind of try to stop the cancer from growing? So, and all this question, I mean, of course, this is in very broad terms, but this is the main aim or the main question of what I'm trying to accomplish here in Bonn. And if I take you in a lab tour, so the most important activity is to basically compare the healthy donors and samples from the healthy donor. In particular, we always maybe receive blood from donors. So it's very important that people choose every day to donate their blood because they are not only supporting the hospital and patients, which is the very important part of it, but also research. Yeah. So we receive blood from healthy donors, and then we also take blood from patients that have a cancer. And then what we do, we isolate the immune cells and focus on studying the components of the immune cells in terms of the metabolic components. So, and we use different technology because to address this question, you cannot use only one technique, right? So there are a set of things that we do to clarify how immune cells are doing. They are fit, they are active, they are functional, are they fighting against cancer, are not, why they are not, did they eat something wrong? And if yes, can we rescue them? You know, so these are the questions that, let's say, we ask every time that we have a sample.
Oh, Laura, this is so amazing and really very, very interesting. I could ask you a lot of more questions, but I want to talk with you also about communication. And in your time or during your time in Paris, you founded the NAOS communication agency. Maybe can you tell us, why did you found a company besides your amazing scientific academic work?
But this came from I came back from a conference. And I was so much looking forward to hear the talk of one of the professor that I have been reading, you know, the paper from his lab and from his people lab. And then when I came back, and I was thinking to myself, I mean, this person does great science, but I really had to put myself through hell to actually listen to him and understand. Yeah? So, and it was for me, you know, astonishing to realize that also people that are very trained and very skilled, maybe, you know, they are not served by great communication skills. And this is true at every level, you know, starting from students, ending up to professors. And then, I mean, I started thinking and talking to people more and more about this problem, to colleagues or to other students, asking them, do you feel you know enough about how to put together a presentation or how to express yourself, or should you move, should you stand, should you, I mean, what are these set of rules? Maybe I'm not aware, or like, how do you decide through your path? What is the best strategy to bring your science to your peers? But then also, if we think a bit broader, if you have to explain it to other people, because often is the case that maybe people ask you, what do you do for a living? And the answer then leaves them kind of puzzled. Yeah. So this, all these feelings together brought me to the realization that actually scientists are a kind of a little bit very far from communication and kind of like they don't even think about this as an important aspect when it's actually half of the thing they do. You know, they write and they talk to people. Yeah. And so I said, okay, maybe actually there is a need there. We should think more about this, and we should think about how we can create an impact in terms of how can we improve the communication skills of scientists at every level to give them another like set of possibilities on how to bring forward their science, also by, you know, creating new networks or maybe talking to investors or talking to agency or talking to, because at the end of the day, it's science is all about networking. It's all about exchanging knowledge, connecting to people and trying to understand what's going on and telling people what you are doing. So all of this moved me to basically think more deeply. And in the lucky coincidence at that time was that I met a brilliant and already successful with this company at that time, a live streamer.
Okay.
And video imaging and in German, in French they call it ingénieur visuel. Uh-huh. So it's like somebody that studies the engineering of video communication.
Cool.
And so by talking to him through, like, you know, in a bar, I was like, wow, you do the video, you know, I do science, and I think we should do this together, you know, communicate it to everybody, because he was so interested in what I was doing in the lab. He was asking me tons of questions. I was trying to explain it to him, and then at the end he told me, wow, you know, I finally understand what scientists in Pasteur do. That's great. And then he was like, you know, actually many people would love to understand a little bit more, maybe. So why don't we think about it? And so I wrote down the project, and together with him, we launched it, let's say, initially as an idea.
Cool, yeah.
And I started to pitch it to different people. And I would say that the idea more and more morphed into something that was much more structured, much more, let's say, I would say that had a little bit of a planning, And then the second encounter that also changed the shape of the company from let's talk about science in videos, changed the shape of the company to let's train scientists to speak in any situation and to actually discuss what they are doing. It changed everything when I met Clara-Anne Marchetti. She's an actor and a stage director in France, actually in Paris. And she has also her own company where she's actually teaching people theater. And I met Clara because actually she is also, she has a background in biology. And she decided to also teach theater to scientists. And so when we met, when we crossed paths, I told her what I think was missing in our training, in our like university training or PhD training. And she told me about what she was teaching in her courses. And it seemed like, again, a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. So the three of us basically put together initially the company. And then I would say that from there, we grew more and more, you know, having on board new people. And now the latest additions are actually, one of them became also associate in NAOS. And his name is Andrea Falconeri. He was a medical doctor and he's still a medical doctor. But actually, he has also a very strong interest in science communication. And so now Benjamin, me and Andrea are actually bringing forward NAOS.
So thank you very much, Laura. This is very interesting. And why do you think, like, I mean, you are part of this scientific community and you see the problems that you with this communication and scientists are not able to do that. why does it is like that? Why don't we implement such things into our educational system or into our academic system? Why is there?
Yeah, as I said, I think that up to very recently, the community didn't realize how important it is to actually address the public or properly address peers, and how is an advantage to actually know how to do that. And so I think that now more and more the European Union, but also institutions are becoming more aware of this. And there are some efforts that are being made internally, but also European wide to actually sensibilize people that are in science towards their actually responsibility to communicate and to be part of the society in a more active terms, sharing what they are doing. And so I think we're going to go in that direction. As of today, we struggled in realizing how important it is to communicate and to be good or great communicators in the field of science. And so I think that it is for this reason that, let's say, in general, communication wasn't part of the training for a scientist at a university or a PhD at any level. As I said, I mean, this is needed for the whole career of a scientist. But I would say that now more and more I see also when applying for grants or when reading the new guidelines of the European Union that we are paying more and more attention. As I said, in a European-wide context, but also in the different institutions. So I think that at some point it will come that people will realize how important it is to implement this in the training of any scientist, you know, from any. And it's already great if we can learn that as students, yeah, because this can then get trained and trained more until we do our own research and we can bring forward our ideas. So the sooner the better. So it would be great already to discuss this at the university level and to give people tools to develop more and more in this regards.
Yeah. And how do you like... in your NAS communication, how do you solve that problem? I mean, you talked about you have actors in your team, and
the team is the key. Yeah. So these are all, as I like to call them, amazing unicorns, because they are these professionals that are in between, let's say, science. So they have in their background a connection to science, an active one, either biology, medicine, engineer. And then they're also expert in communication, so in different area. So as I said, we have Benjamin that is our video expert and associate, and Andrea that is also an associate and is a medical doctor and a science communicator, and Clara Anne and Odile Blanchette that are both actresses, and they have both and background in sciences, and they teach like the art of verbal communication, so oral communication. And then the team has also Jeremiah Endren. So he's a writing coach or an expert in linguistics. So how to use the right word at the right time to actually explain your content and to how to bring your wording to the next level. And then, last but not least, we have Sonia. Sonia Aguera, she's actually a cartoonist, but she is also a PhD. I met her after a postdoc, actually, and Institute Curie, and now she lives in England, and she draws. She draws science. Cool. So, as you can see, the whole team is a mix of scientific and artistic.
Very creative.
Yeah, exactly. It's a creative team with a scientific background. And so imagine what you can achieve with this kaboom of skills. Yeah. And so what we thought on how we wanted to solve this problem is to tackle communication in the three main pillars. So the writing, then the talkings or the speech and the visual arts, right? So the graphics. Mm-hmm. So then what we do is to organize active workshops where basically at different level. So depending on the existing communication skills of a certain group of people or a certain person, and then try to build on whatever is there already, helping people to understand how in their own manner and with their own personality and with their own skill set, they can actually find a way to express themselves a little bit better in these three different areas. Mm-hmm. And so we teach body language, we teach, as I said, the use of words, and then also the weight or the words that we use, because of course, every single thing that we say as a specific importance to the audience. And then we teach how to catch audience attention or how to use the right color, the right space, the right graphic when talking to a specific audience. And we do that, as I said before, or adapt these trainings if to cover the needs of different clients. So, for example, if it's a researcher that wants to talk to peers, or if he or she wants to talk to the big public, and if we have a startupper that actually wants to convince a set of people to invest on his idea, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So all these courses are designed by these unicorns in the teams to actually achieve a very specific goal that every participant might have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds very cool. And one question that comes up in my mind, can every scientist from every department or every scientific discipline can attend to that workshop? Or is this specifically only just for medicine people?
No. Actually, so far we have worked with very different backgrounds. So we worked with people from the medical field, the biology field, the engineer field. We had very different, type of participants, and also with very different backgrounds, not only in coming from different countries, but also with different trainings and with different level of skills. So I think the beautiful part of this workshop is that they are very flexible and can actually imagine it is as a t-shirt that is a unique size and can be worn by everybody, but it would look so different on everybody, because everybody makes it shine their own way. Yeah. Mm. So at the end of the day, we don't want to teach people a unique way. We don't want to teach you anything, actually. We want to just give you or empower you with a specific skill set that allows you to then be the best version of yourself in this communication side of yourself. So at the end of the day, we just are trying to support what already is there. Yeah, or to bring it out if it is not already out.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, that's a nice approach. So I like that very much. And it was a very cool and good example with this t-shirt. So I could right imagine that. all right. That's real cool. And how can I attend to that workshops? How can I find you? Are you like coming to the university or?
We normally we can be contacted through our website or our pages in the different social media, but we also directly organize with institutions that are either public or private. We have worked with university, also research centers, as well as a pharma company or like maybe other type of companies that have maybe marketing. So as I said, it's very easy to enter in contact with us, and then based on the needs of your specific group of people or yourself, we try to provide a product that suits your needs and try to answer the questions that you are actually posing. Yeah.
Okay. So one of my last questions, do you have like references or examples of the outcomes of your workshops? Like, I don't know, people who mastered a big keynote and then got some million investments or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that success story. I mean, we have collaborated with different universities, and so we have already different people that are out and about who had our trainings, and for example, you know, me myself, for example, I'm still training on this, and for example, for my grant writing, I used the help of our writing coach, and also to master a little bit more my presentation skills. But of course, we worked, for example, with the startups of EIT Food, which is EIT is an European supported organization that actually tackles different different sides. It's actually a huge organization that is involved in the health food industry and innovation. And so every big chunk of EIT has a school where basically postdoc and PhD are trained to support their ideas, and then they are launched to create startups. And every year we train the startuppers of the EIT food community, and so of course, you know, you might know, or the audience might know how tough it is to support a startup, but we have a very good example there of people that have achieved to put in the game also some of the advices that we provided. So I think, you know, overall, between public and private sectors, we have different good example, as well as a bad example, right? So I think it's fair to mention both. It's not always a success story, right? I think it really depends on how badly you want to improve, yeah? Okay. As in everything, yeah? In all the effort you put. So there is no magic behind it. I also to put together this startup, I had to go really out my ways to learn stuff that were completely new, you know, business planning and management and how to hire people and who to choose and stuff. Yeah. That as a scientist, I was like, why am I doing that? I wonder so much, and I tried to pitch this idea so many times and in many different years, and I failed. And then, you know, everything came together when, you know, you don't give up, you fight until you don't find the right people that want to fight with you and believe in your idea. And then the right people that believe in you, you know, and then are there to invest. And so I think it's just the secret is don't give up until when you don't see it alive.
Okay. Yeah. And you are the best example for that, right? What you explained.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm the best example, but one of one of many.
I would say the best here example. And yeah, that's cool. So what is your vision? What is your future with your company? What do you want to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, what I think it's really needed is that we understand that this is something that should be part of our training or our background. And so what I would love for everybody to have easy access to this kind of trainings and build their own, let's say, tool set, and not because they have to be lucky to be at the right center that also worries about communication, but just because the university or their courses or their PhD courses or their company provides it to them because they know and they value the importance of communication. So I think that's what I'm trying to accomplish with my people. We are trying to enter in contact with as many centers as we can and to bring our products there to show them how much good they can do Just by implementing into, let's say, a kind of a yearly base already. And this would change a lot for every worker at different levels. Yeah. So this is, I guess, our long term, because I also believe we have this sentence, you know, we want to bring science to people. But we cannot be the only one to do that. So we want to train our scientists or our techs or our everybody that does this type of job to actually train them to have their own skill to bring this message home. Yeah. So this is the big picture. Yeah. We would like to empower everybody that is in this field, in the scientific field, and in a broader sense, to really talk about it, talk about science, because I don't think we appreciate how much science is impacting everybody's daily life, daily life.
Oh, Laura, this was amazing. This was amazing, beautiful talk and nice. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that and taking us with you in your lab, literally. And we are left. We have no time. No time is left. So we need to come to the end. But it was really fascinating to hear your thoughts on science and your working career. So this was very amazing. Thank you very much.
So thank you for having me here. I mean, it was really nice to participate and for giving me the opportunity to share my experience.
Of course, I guess this was amazing, right? So amazing with your academic career, amazing with your thoughts and experience on communication. And I wish you all the best in both fields, in your academic and your industry-driven business.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, maybe we will see here or here in some couple of months or years, maybe as a unicorn, who knows? And then we will talk about communication, science, entrepreneurship, and medicine, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always here available to share, of course.
Laura Surace, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Three, two, one.